The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. I am your host, Dr. Carol Smith, Commissioner of Health for Ulster County. With me today is my co-host, Vin Martello, our Director of Community Health Relations. Good morning, Vin.
Hi, Dr. Smith. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Dr. Smith, today we're going to be talking about women's cancer prevention. And as you may recall, we did have a person from Westchester Medical Center Health Alliance on previously talking about some aspects of support for women. But today we have a great guest, someone whom we know very well, and she's Dr. Ashonda St. John, returning to Healthy Ulster Radio. Dr. St. John is chair of obstetrics and gynecology at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, medical director for advanced OBGYN associates in Kingston, and a member of our Ulster County Board of Health. So, Dr. St. John, welcome back to Healthy Ulster Radio.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be back and understand that this is such an important topic that we're bringing forth to our audience, and just really grateful that I can be a part of the discussion.
It's great to have you. So, Dr. St. John, before we get into the details, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to your current position and about your role at Health Alliance Hospital?
Absolutely. You know, it is truly a full circle moment for me. I graduated from New York Medical College 25 years ago, and New York Medical College is the medical school that is affiliated with Westchester Medical Center. So that, for me, is number one, a full a circle moment for me. The majority of my career has been in New York City. Lastly, I was working at Columbia Presbyterian for over 14 years, where I was the director of all the outpatient OBGYN services. And with COVID happening in the first wave and how it impacted Manhattan and other really underserved areas throughout New York City, my family and I kind of strived towards being someplace where we could be outside, and we weren't so close together, especially during the quarantine times. And so we arrived in Kingston in July of 2020, and we fell in love with the place, with the community, with the patients, and we decided to stay. And so I have been with Health Alliance for the past 3 years. We have settled into this area, and my daughter goes to college in Albany. So we've kind of made a home here. One of the things that I have done in terms of, you know, taking on the role of chair of OBGYN is also recognizing, you know, the needs of this community. You know, prior to taking the position, I did a true needs assessment from an OBGYN lens in terms of what was needed. And what I found is that there were so many subspecialties that did not exist here in Kingston. And so our patients had the hardship of traveling to get, you know, gynecologic oncology needs or urogynecology or comprehensive family planning, or even having minimally invasive gynecologic surgery. So one of the things that I am so proud of is that we have the support of Westchester Medical Center, and we do have those really world-class clinicians coming up to Kingston to provide care for our patients in Kingston, but also Ulster County, so that patients don't have the hardship of travel, but also recognizing that there are social determinants of health that impair patients from getting healthcare access. And so one of those is transportation. So bringing those services right here locally, right in their backyard, that was of the utmost importance to me. And I'm so proud that we've been able to succeed in doing it. When we first brought these subspecialties of GYN and OB to Kingston, we were doing it based on a once a month schedule. And now we are nearly at a weekly schedule because we understand that there's a need for it, but also the volume supports the need. So really happy and proud to do the work that we've done to really understand the impact of social determinants of health on a rural population, and then developing programming that caters to that need. So that is one of the earmarks of me taking on the chair position, but also kind of creating programming that puts the patient at the center so that we have more of a patient-centered approach.
Wow, we are so lucky.
We are very fortunate that you really came full circle. That certainly has been a welcomed change for us to have your expertise in this area, your dedication and your interest in this area. So certainly thank you for that. And also, one of the things that in one of our very recent conversations we were talking about is, really the need to give patients the opportunity to get their screenings on time and early, especially if they are beginning to see some symptoms that are not normal, so to speak, to be evaluated. Would you like to comment a little bit more on the importance of getting these screenings and early intervention in the event that the patient, the woman, begins to experience some symptoms of concern?
Absolutely. One of the things I recognize immediately was that we don't realize how much of a medical desert exists in rural populations. We talk about the inner city and in urban areas a lot, but we don't talk enough about rural populations. And what I recognized here was the presence of a medical desert. And I know that sounds like a very interesting kind of word to describe, but when patients tell me that they have to drive an hour or 2 hours to see me, then that means that there's a need. When we talk about, maybe only having one car for one household, and so kind of navigating who gets to use a car, does someone have to go to work, and then to also be able to seek medical care. So early detection is really, really crucial. We are coming out of a global pandemic where many patients were afraid to go to the doctor, right? They were fearful of COVID and also their own individual or impact on their own families. So what we are trying to open up is just the ability for early detection and screening to occur. And we understand that once you do have early detection, then we can initiate treatment and management, and all of those collectively improve the outcome of a patient's journey. And it reduces the burden of disease, but also it helps us identify patients and people with no signs and symptoms. That's the ideal part of screening, is patients don't have signs and symptoms, but it's also part of a global preventative medicine initiative. So when we think about screening, we have to really, really be intentional in terms of increasing access and coverage to our patients, but also the availability of screening. One of the common themes I hear over and over with patients is, they can't get in for an appointment, or the provider's not accepting new patients, or they don't accept my insurance. And again, I'm sure you hear this a lot as well. And this worries me. This concerns me. One of the first things I did when I came here is I understand that we here at WMC Health and in our APS practice, we accept all insurances. But also we have partnered with the New York City Department of Health, and we have a patient navigator. So if we do have a patient who doesn't have insurance, we will help them in pathways to establish health insurance so that they can have those screening opportunities to, again, improve their outcomes. But I think one of the things I want to go back to and just make sure that it's pressed upon our audience is that screening is important because we are identifying disease in patients with no symptoms. And that's the whole purpose of screening. And so we want to think about ensuring optimal health for our patients, but also understanding that we can be preventative and we can be part of primary care, but this can actually change the outcome for not only our patients, but their families and their loved ones.
And Dr. St. John, can you talk about what cancers are most common for women and what specific screenings you have available to detect those or not?
Absolutely. So when we think about gynecologic cancers, the most common in order, number one would be breast cancer. Number two would be lung cancer. Number three would be uterine cancer. Four would be cervical cancer. Five would be ovarian cancer. and 6 would be endometrial cancer. So when we think about breast cancer, and there's a lot of controversy about, you know, self breast exams and should patients do them, should they not? And I don't want to go into that, but more importantly, I want to elevate the importance of the annual GYN exam and what happens in the annual GYN exam. Of course, there are preventative screenings that are done to then also satisfy healthcare maintenance.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I saw your hand.
No, that's okay. No. We have about a minute left, so go continue.
But also the importance of having mammography. So when we think about breast cancer is so scary to our patients. Many patients are scared to have it done because it may be uncomfortable, but they also may be scared of the results, or they may have family members who have had breast cancer and have seen them go through a very difficult journey with that. So one of the things we want to start and we want to elevate is that if you have a family history, and especially a first degree relative, and what that means is that that's either a sibling or a parent, those are considered a first-degree relative. If you have a first-degree relative who has had breast cancer, then you should have screening done. And this is when I really strongly encourage you to seek the counsel of your physician or your medical provider to kind of really embark on what does screening look like for you individually. But we do recommend, and this is through the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, that all GYN patients have a mammography starting at age 40 and then yearly thereafter. And mammography also should be done in concert with having a breast exam performed by their healthcare provider.
Well, Dr. St. John, we'd like to hear more about the other screenings that are available. But first, we're going to just take a very short break, and we'll be back after these words. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio.
Westchester Medical Center Health Network's new Health Alliance Hospital is open in Kingston at 105 Mary's Avenue. The new hospital delivers on WMC Health's commitment to provide access to advanced healthcare right here in this community. Our comfortable and welcoming new Health Alliance Hospital has highly skilled doctors, nurses, and staff. We are ready to make your healthcare experience the best it can be. Here are just a few of the services ready to take care of you and your loved ones when you need us. A new emergency department with 24/7 triage for behavioral health needs, life-saving advanced cardiology programs, family birth center, private rooms, precise imaging technology, critical care support. And later this year, our inpatient psychiatry program will be reestablished to complement existing emergency and outpatient programs. Go to hahv.org for information. That's hahv.org.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on 92.9 and 96.5 WBPM.
Welcome back. You are listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Our special guest today is Dr. Ashonda St. John. And Dr. St. John is the chairperson for the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston. And she's also medical director for Advanced OBGYN Associates in Kingston. Dr. St. John, before the break, we started talking about the importance of getting regular pelvic exams and screenings. Breast exams and screenings, mammograms for detection of breast cancer. But we were also going to speak about the importance of screening for cervical cancer. So would you like to speak a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, we want to kind of explore what cervical cancer looks like. It is the fourth most common GYN cancer, but we understand that it is preventable. And so one of the ways that we are able to prevent cervical cancer is by doing pap smears, which are screening tools for cervical cancer. Now, it's very important to understand that anytime you have a pelvic exam, it doesn't mean you're having a pap smear. And just like when you have a pap smear, it doesn't mean that you're having a bimanual pelvic exam. So let's just really kind of dissect what that looks like. When a patient comes in and we do what's called a pelvic exam, we use a speculum, which allows us direct visualization of the cervix. And what we do with the pap smear is we collect a sample of cells from within the cervix and on the outer surface surface of the cervix for that to be then analyzed in our laboratories to detect whether there is one, which is dysplasia, meaning that there's an abnormality of the cells, or if there is any evidence of precancer or cancer. Now, when we think about pap smears, you know, many of us, and me including as a woman, we don't like these exams. These are not fun exams, but we want to really express and stress that they are important exams because, again, we're able to detect early detection of cancer if that is there, but also prevent it as well. So pap smears are recommended to start at age 21. And this is irrespective if one is sexually active or not. We start doing our pap smears, and this is the recommendations of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, but also the American Society of Cervical Pathology. And so it is based on their recommendation that we start pap smears at 21 years of age. And from the age of 21 to 29, we do those pap smears every 3 years. Starting at the age of 30, we do pap smears, but also we do what's called HPV co-testing. And HPV, human papillomavirus, is a virus that we know, especially the high-risk types, 16 and 18, are responsible for cervical cancer. So starting at age 30, we do a pap smear with the co-testing, and it's nothing additional you have to do. It's part of the collection when they do the pap smear, when we send it to the laboratory and they do the analysis. And based on that, if the pap smear and the co-testing is performed, then pap smears are every 5 years. And that's up to the age of 65. Now, that doesn't mean that someone over 65, someone 70 or 75 or 80, doesn't require a pap smear. That is determined by your medical provider. And one thing I want to truly stress is just because you have a pap smear done or not done, right? If it's not within that time frame you need one done, that doesn't mean that you should not attend your annual exam with your GYN. And it doesn't mean that you don't require a pelvic exam. Remember, a pelvic exam is also exploring the vagina. It's exploring the vulva. It's looking for other signs of abnormality. So all of these in totality are screenings. So we really and truly encourage our patients to have those screenings because, again, we understand early detection, treatment and management, those all collectively improve outcomes, reduces burden of disease. And also, this is part of globally what we call preventative medicine. So when we think about cervical cancer, I would be remiss if we do not talk about our opportunities for cervical cancer prevention. And that is with the human papillomavirus vaccination. The trade name is called Gardasil. It is a quadrivalent vaccination, meaning that it has the four major subtypes of HPV that are responsible for cervical cancer and also for condyloma, which is genital warts. And so they have packaged those four most common co-types of HPV together. And that's a vaccination that can be administered as early as 9 years old. So sometimes our patients may hear this from their pediatrician when they go for pediatric appointments with their children, but this is a vaccination that can be given as early as 9 years old. Some American Academy of Pediatrics sometimes may say you can start at 11, but the consensus is it can be started as early as 9 years old. And it's a series of three vaccinations. It's given at 1 month, then 2 months, and then 4 months. So it's a collection of three. But when we think about cervical cancer, no one in this country should be afflicted with cervical cancer. We have means of early detection through pap smear screening. We have preventative efforts with the HPV vaccination. And then we also really encourage our patients to have those annual pelvic exams. So I really tried to break down what a pap smear looks like, what a pelvic exam looks like, and then also the importance of our vaccination. So it's almost like a 1-2-3 punch. You know, we're really trying to knock out cancer. And, you know, what we understand is that cancer doesn't only affect a patient, it affects the whole family. And the whole family will be affected by, you know, the effects of cancer. So if we have opportunities that we can really truly be preventative, we want to kind of move forth in that path.
Dr. St. John, can you talk a little bit about, you mentioned the HPV vaccination, pap smears, pelvic exams, all being important part of the prevention regimen. Are there lifestyle factors that come into play with these cancers and others that you would commonly recommend to your patients?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest ways that we can truly impact the preventability of cervical cancer is with smoking cessation. So what that means is refraining from tobacco smoking. We know the impact of smoking has on all organs of the body, but specifically it does affect and increase the advancement of cervical cancer. So one of the things that we really, really stress in our patients, especially those with abnormal pap smears or who have to undergo what's called a colposcopy. So that's one thing we didn't talk about. Let me just briefly go over that. So once a pap smear is performed, and if it is abnormal, then we may have to do what's called a colposcopy exam. And that's when we use a microscope to look at the cervix. And what it does for the visual eye is it enlarges the size of the cervix, and then we are able to detect any abnormalities in the surface of the cervix. And at times, this may require us to take a biopsy, which means just a small piece of the cervix is removed very carefully and under direct visualization. And that biopsy is sent to a pathologist in the lab so that they can analyze the histological components of the cervix. So histological components means all the different cellular layers are examined. And that way we can detect if there is any one dysplasia, which is abnormal cells, but also two, if there's any cancer or any precancer lesions. So it is a very complex analysis of the tissue, but this is done as a result of abnormal pap smears. But again, we truly want to educate our patients on preventative measures. So one, smoking cessation, meaning no smoking, tobacco smoking, but also getting their HPV vaccination.
Again, you mentioned what happens if you do see an abnormality. What happens, and we have about 2 minutes left, what happens if, in the event that you do find evidence of cancer or precancer, what happens next?
Yeah, so I wish sometimes the answers would be so simple, but sometimes it's a case by case basis. But one of the really values that we have with our kind of our mothership, as we call Westchester, is that we have the support of Westchester. And so we are able to have our patients see one of our gynecologic oncologists, and we're able to kind of satisfy those appointments quite swiftly. And when there are evaluated by our gynecologic oncologist, then they will determine an individualized and customized treatment program and what that would look like. Sometimes that may be where we would do a bigger biopsy, or sometimes that may include doing, more of a surgical intervention like a hysterectomy.
So Dr. St. John, we are quickly running out of time. How do people get in touch with you and get more information on anything that we've talked about today?
Well, we are so happy to say that we are accepting new patients, and we're happy to see everyone and anyone who has any concerns about their women's health issues, their OBGYN, anything that we can do to help. Our number is 845-303-1132. And again, one of our efforts in really trying to partner with organizations such as yourself and the radio station is that if you call and you announce that you heard us over the radio, we will guarantee an appointment within 2 weeks.
Wow.
So we are dedicated to the community that we serve. We're dedicated to our patients, but we want you to know we put you first.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dr. St. John. Truly, your care and concern and dedication comes through very clearly, and we're so happy to have you in our community. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and thank you to you and your colleagues, Dr. St. John. That's all the time we have for today. Tune in next. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.